Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures in world wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Your whole lives, I've watched you, tracked you, studied you. You are the prototypes, the chosen ones. And from your offspring, I will control the future of all human creatures on Earth.
Thank you.
Walkers. I'm sure my ghouls of the night are probably going to catch this one on the archive, but welcome to another special edition of the Midnight Black Mass, the Midday Black Mass, for a very rare occasion, but our staff had some prior commitments last night, so we had to bump up to noon today. But it is I, the devil you know, the maniacal minister of the occult, the emperor of evil, the most sinister host on the coast, the Reverend Dan Wilson, here for another edition of the program. And we're bringing you a superhero-filled, nerd-wild edition of the Midnight Black Mass. First track you heard there was no secret to anyone that listens to this show. That was, of course, the 1976 classic off of one of the greatest albums ever recorded, Destroyer, by one of the greatest bands of all time, Kiss. That was God of Thunder in honor of the Norse god himself, Thor. So, yeah, that's just a little taste of what we've got for you here on the Midnight Black Mass tonight. Today, we've got the Muji Movie Minute, going to be discussing some of the Marvel films in the franchise leading up to the Avengers, and a whole lot more. So stay with us, and just wanted to get some wrestling plugs out of the way, of course, before we move along. Try to make it rapid fire, because I'm on the road tonight. I'm going to hit the road here in just a couple of hours. Go to Cornelia, Georgia for an NWA Anarchy International television taping. Sean Tempers, NWA North American and NWA Anarchy Champion, will be putting the Anarchy title on the line against my man, the Angel of Death, Azrael, the former champion. This is a rematch of their much-talked-about title bout from Hardcore Hell 2012. And so Tempers and Azrael going to hook it up one more time tonight at the Church of Southern Wrestling, where I preside as the Reverend. And also another big opportunity for my boys, the Hate Junkies, going to try to regain those NWA Anarchy Tag Team titles against the new champions of the NWA Elite, Brian Casanova, and the Deadly Sin 7, of course, Jeff G. Bailey. Now, that's an interesting matchup, because I have a little bit of stake in 7. I sold his contract to Jeff G. Bailey for future appearances about a year and a half ago, but part of that agreement was that we would maintain any existing relationships. So I have 7 as a client in many other regions, managing him in NWA Chattanooga and in Rossville, and we're trying to keep this just business, and I hope it stays that way, but you know, he's still honoring what I've got for him. So tonight, I know he's at the helm of Bailey, and he's a monster, and there ain't nothing I can do about it. So the Hate Junkies are going to have to be prepared, but I discovered that guy, and I know his weaknesses also, and I hope he don't get mad at me for that, but he's got to also understand on my end that it's just business, so we got to do this, and the Rejects are going to be riding tall in the NWA Anarchy tonight, 8 o'clock p.m. Bell time, Cornelia, Georgia. Don't want to miss it. Go to NWAAnarchy.net. For details. The following Saturday, I'll be at Empire Wrestling in Rossville, Georgia. That May the 5th with the Devil's Rejects. That'll be at 22 Austin Avenue, not to be confused with 22 Acacia Avenue. No, it's not a whorehouse. It's a wrestling arena. and only Iron Maiden fans will get that. But and then NWA Chattanooga will be returning to Sunny Days of Middle School on May 24th. Be there with the Devil's Rejects as 7 will be taking on Drew Haskins for the NWA Southern title. Also be there with the NWA Southeastern Heavyweight Champion, the Southeastern Strangler, Andrew Alexander. On to the music news. We really only have one piece of music news here before we get to the Muji Movie Minute. Roadrunner Records out of the UK, Canada, and Europe has been shut down by the Warner Music Group. We've seen this happen with Time Warner, Warner Brothers, when they acquire other organizations. World Championship Wrestling certainly comes to mind. They will be keeping the U.S. branch open.
But the news is, of course, the label that has housed bands over the years like Sepultura, Merciful Fate, Typo Negative, Obituary, currently Megadeth, Mastodon, Rob Zombie, Machine Head, Lamb of God internationally, so that's going to be a big factor for them. Korn is not really a fan of them, but a huge band. So, CEO and founder Cease Wessels, what a name, is leaving the label 17 months after it was sold to the Warner Music Group. With the exit of Wessels, at least 36 staff members worldwide were let go. The exact number is unknown. The label is being changed to basically for back office and support and keeping the frontline label functioning, like A&R, marketing, promotion, and publicity, all contained within the U.S. offices. So they are going to keep open in the U.S. for how long, who knows. Apparently, the plan is for them to still operate as a standalone label under the Warner Music Group, but 16 U.S. staff members were let go. So, interesting times. A lot of the bands speaking out. Arch Enemy is blaming it on illegal downloading, and of course, that's a whole other debate that's going on, and we had all day, we'd get into that right now, but we'll definitely have a more heated discussion on that if it's a hot topic in the future. But, gonna go to some more tunes here in honor of the Muji Movie Minute, and we'll be back with the reviews of some classic Marvel films all leading up to the Avengers coming out next week. And we're back, and that was the almighty Black Sabbath with Iron Man off of the another one of the all-time greatest albums ever recorded in Paranoid. And, of course, in honor of Tony Stark, Iron Man, and that's a perfect segue into the Muji Movie Minute. And a historic edition of the Muji Movie Minute today, because this is the first time we've ever departed from the horror franchises and the horror genre, but we are experiencing a very cool phenomenon in the United States right now, and that superhero mania is running wild like never before with the Avengers coming out next week. We've got Avengers versus X-Men is a high-selling comic book event. And, of course, television, media, everywhere is comic book mania. So we're going to honor that here on the Muji Movie Minute. Muji, welcome to the show, my brother.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well, man. Getting ready to get on the road and get some asses whipped.
Right. It's a good day.
Always a good day. Well, we'll see what happens when it's over with. But right now, it's always a good day until you walk away with the loser's end of the purse.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So, I understand that you actually, with Avengers coming out next week, want to go ahead and just briefly touch on all of the Marvel Universe films, correct?
Yeah, I figure we might as well. You know, there's, you know, we'll be in midnight next week. I don't think there's any way we'll be able to avoid seeing the Avengers before next week's show, so we might as well just talk about them all a little bit.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think just overall, I'll talk about the movies. I'll give like a score for each one of them. Just to throw it out there before I do this, is that like movies, I kind of see is like it's hard to rate like movies of different genres against each other. So, you know, if I say one of these movies is a score and I set a horror movie as a higher score, I don't necessarily mean that it's a better movie. Because I just think that, like I said, it's really hard to rate them just genre. I like rating them genre by genre a little bit better. But start out just talking about that it's pretty crazy what they've done when you really think about it with all these movies, how going all the way back to the Hulk, and you got two Iron Mans and Thor, Captain America, that, you know, they've been working on for 3 years now and five movies all tying in, you know, to go to this one giant movie, and it's something that's never, you know, that's never ever been done before, so it's a pretty crazy idea. I mean, with all these movies combined, you know, coming into this one, just on the other five, they've spent over $1 billion making new things, which is a pretty huge risk, because if a couple of them would have done bad and people wouldn't have been really excited, then they could have lost a crap ton of money. But ever since,
they're not regretting that decision now.
No. All the movies have made pretty good money. Iron Man and Iron Man 2 especially have already made them a crap ton of money. And then Avengers is, you know, just based on the pre-sales is looking like, you know, who knows, but it already is looking like there's like a legitimate chance it could end up, you know, being like one of the biggest movies ever. It'd be, at this point, it'd almost be disappointing if it isn't like one of the like five biggest grossing movies that at least like in the U.S. ever. But I guess depending on how much people like it, you know, once the general public gets to start seeing it, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up giving The Dark Knight a run. It's not even out yet, but that's just from, you know, all the pre-sales and how well it's been reviewed so far. But back to the movies, Iron Man, the first Iron Man is really the movie that gets you, that really made it look like this whole deal was going to work. Iron Man was, at the time that it came out, very possibly my favorite superhero movie that had come out, at least I like modern movies, maybe Spider-Man 2 better, but it's great. I think the whole, like, franchise and the whole success of everything, you know, they owe and did a great job at casting Robert Downey Jr. because he really, turn Iron Man from, you know, more of like a B-type character to, you know, one of the faces of Marvel now. And, you know, yeah. A lot of it just having to do with him being great and his charisma in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tony Stark was always a great character. Tony Stark always more charismatic than Iron Man, so they really nailed it with Robert Downey Jr., and then he brought a whole new flair to the character. Because I almost thought that the previous thing, like, especially looking at some of the voice actors that have played him, he's more been in animated things. And until Robert Downey Jr. voiced him, it became him in the flesh, there was always this dry tone to the way that he spoke. And I never liked that, because that's never how when I read him in the comics, that's not the voice I heard in my head. And then when I see Robert Downey Jr. and he's the character, and that's the voice I heard in my head all along, you know, so that's really a special feat when you can leap across the page like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He really turned the whole thing around. I remember just as a kid, I read comics now way more than I did then, but, you know, just being, you know, it was a hobby, but not one of my main hobbies. You know, of course I read all like the stuff that you do when you're a kid, because you know, if you're just barely into the comics, you know, I mean, I read Fantastic Four, X-Men, Spider-Man mostly, but, you know, I always thought of Iron Man. You know, it's like on Marvel, you had your main guys. It was Spider-Man, the Hulk, Fantastic Four, the X-Men, specifically Wolverine, and then, you know, you kind of had your second-tier characters, at least, especially if you were just, you know, not a huge comic book fan, but just kind of a general fan of the superheroes. And then, you know, now, you know, it's arguable Iron Man, you know, next to probably Spider-Man and Wolverine are still, you know, their main two guys. You know, he's right there. Especially in the movie world, he's obviously, you know, the main guy for the Avengers movie. And that movie, though, you know, I thought it was great. And it was kind of like show, you know, things to come. Like, you know, it's all opinion after that. I mean, I still think that Iron Man 1 is my favorite of the, and I think it's the best of the Avengers related movies. I know the special effects have gotten even better, even though it was just 2008. The movies that came out in 2011, special effects have come a long way in just 3 years. But I still think it holds up to me as the best of the Avengers related movies. It was the first one that showed you the signs of things to come, that, you know, they really just got it right. I mean, I don't know. It almost makes you think about all the movies that have come out before, any sort of, like, superhero-type movies that kind of disappointed you, like, for any reason, you know, whether it be movies you still liked, but you were like, you know, I like that, and I think they could do it better. I mean, they pretty much, in most of these movies, have just, you know, stuck to the characters and the stories and not try to do anything crazy, which is what I think people, like, wanted all along. You know, they've had some stories, and, you know, and some of the stuff that's in there, you know, they go with what's in the comics, and also, you know, some of it's, you know, not entirely based on the comics, you know, or a little original.
So they modernize a lot, you know, yeah. like Tony Stark guy instead of in Vietnam, it's in the Gulf War, you know, like that type of thing. But, you know, they really did stick pretty truly to the comics.
Yeah, and they've just, you know, they've stuck with that and made the characters, you know, what you thought they were. And like I said, you know, with Tony Stark, with Robert Downey Jr. playing him, you know, added to it and made it a lot better, but just not, you know, do anything crazy. Like, you know, there's just been times in the past where they've just, you know, how we're going to get people to like these guys. And it's like, you know, everybody knows who all these people are. So they just basically made them the way you imagined. And the movies have all turned out good. With Iron Man, because it was the first one to come out, I gave it an 87% well done. That's the highest. I kind of just ranked superhero movies in general just against all other movies. And, you know, if I was going to sit down tomorrow and watch a movie, you know, Iron Man's, you know, definitely in the top of, like, what I would watch. It's still super entertaining. So it's really good. They do a great job. You know, when you go into a superhero movie, like, you want it to be, you know, you know, like, it'd be deep. Like, The Dark Knight is, you know, certainly as serious as any movie, and I really do like that. But, you know, in general, when you go in to see one of these movies, you know, you want to see a good, you know, you just, you know, you're going to see a ton of action. You know, there's going to be tons of cool stuff like that. They're probably going to be, you know, especially with Iron Man, it's going to be pretty funny.
I was going to say that, too, especially with Marvel. You want it to be light because, you know, of course, it's got to have serious moments, but that's the one thing. There's just this an element of fun about the Marvel Universe that, you know, a lot of the main characters are always cracking jokes and what have you. They recognize that, they're in the realm of the ridiculous, so they exploit it, but without insulting the material, you know.
Yeah, you just want it to be balanced, basically. Is, you know, you it needs to be serious enough to where you care what's happened in the movie. I don't, you know, personally want to see 2.5 hours of just, you know, the whole blowing everything up. You know, you got to have some story to make you care about the fights and everything. But yeah, but the majority of the movie is light. Now, the first Iron Man, you know, when Tony Stark's, you know, been captured and is being held in the Middle East and everything, you know, it got, you know, at least sort of serious, like, for a little while. Like I said, that's what you want. You got to get, you know, the hero in a little bit of trouble, and a little bit of seriousness, but, you know, the general feel of the movie, probably 80% of the movie is light with a combination of the action and the jokes and stuff. And I thought, like I said, you know, I gave it 87 for this. I thought it was pretty much perfect. It was well-balanced. It was great. So that was the first Iron Man. Then we go to the Hulk was the next one that came out. Liked it a lot, especially coming off the first Hulk movie, which I didn't like at all, which it wasn't – everything about the first Hulk wasn't terrible with Eric Bana, but the Hulk was just so out of place. They were just a couple years too soon on having the special effects to make the Hulk look like he was in the movie and not
– oh, yeah, he looked like Who Framed Roger Rabbit with the cartoons in the fucking real world, you know. It was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and that just pretty much ruined it because once you see the Hulk, you're just completely taken out of the movie. And you're like, oh. But this one, technology had come a long way, and it looked really good for the most part. I remember there were a couple times where, you know, it wasn't perfect. I've heard in this movie, and it's gotten so good now for the Avengers that the Hulk just blends in like a person. So I'm really pumped to see that from the previews. That's what it looked like. You know, it looks like it just fits in. But this movie was good. It was certainly, it was probably the most serious of the movies building up to this one. You know, Edward Norton, I know, was helped supervise the script and had a lot to do with it. And, you know, and I thought he was awesome in the movie. A bummer that, you know, he couldn't work out coming back to play the Hulk. But I liked it a lot. It was, you know, it was actually probably the most story. It's not my favorite of the movies, but it was probably the most story-laden of all the Avengers movies, probably the most serious. And like I said, you know, they just basically they took everything that they did right in the first Hulk movie, but had a Hulk that looked like the Hulk. And, you know, it was cool him being on the run and South American coming back and everything. It had
and Abomination was awesome. I thought they did a great job with him. And then also they did like a lot, there was a lot of cool comic book Easter eggs in the Hulk for, you know, real nerds of the genre, like the scientist that helps him, of course, and gets the serum spill on his head and it grows. That's the leader. He's one of the Hulk's main villains, like, you know, later on in continuity. So it's very awesome that they included that. Just a lot of little things like the super soldier shit and the, of course, General Thunderbolt Ross, William Hurt was awesome. Like, Sam Elliott was good as Thunderbolt Ross in the first Hulk movie, but William Hurt really knocked it out of the park there. I really dug the Hulk. It wasn't my favorite either, but it was definitely an enjoyable viewing.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I gave it a 75% well done. It was really, you know, it was good. Next, Iron Man 2. I liked Iron Man 2 a lot. But not nearly as much as the first Iron Man. I thought that they, you know, it was coming off the first one, so I thought it was pretty cool how they kind of showed the transformation of Tony Stark now, you know, how, I mean, already going on the first one, you know, he was, you know, a celebrity and everything, but now he's a super celebrity, you know, everybody knows that he's Iron Man, and he kind of shows it off and everything. It was, you know, it was a lot of fun. I thought that in it, It was good. I didn't think, like I said, I think whereas the first one perfectly balanced everything, I think this one, there probably could have been a little bit more to it. Like the, you never felt like Tony Stark was in any real trouble. I thought the build-up of Mickey Rourke's character was pretty cool, him coming in to be the bad guy and everything. But him and Tony Stark, like, it seemed like they, just to me, that they kind of were on, like, their own little separate stories for part of the movie.
Right.
And then they, you know, even though obviously all his stuff that he was doing was motivated to get Tony Stark, it just seemed like it was, you know, there was a lot more of just kind of Tony Stark showing off that he's a super famous guy. And, you know, they were trying to build in, like, they were trying to, you know, they did, like, a whole lot more with the lieutenant character that Don Cheadle was now playing. They were trying to get him built up for you. They were introducing Scarlett Johansson into the movie. So, you know, there were a lot of characters that they were introducing to kind of build up, you know, just to put in the Avengers movie. So they kind of had a lot to do. But like I said, I still liked it a lot. Still, say, 80% well done on it. Thought it was good. I just didn't think it was as good as the first one.
I enjoyed the second Iron Man a lot. You had the cameo. I really liked the old stuff that they showed of the Stark Expo. You had, like, the original Human Torch there in the background, again, with the Marvel Easter eggs. They really paid homage to the fans that have followed this stuff, but still gave a story that the masses could enjoy. And I just really liked that. Like, you had Captain America's shield found there, and they did lots of cool stuff there, foreshadowing things to come in Iron Man 2. And that's really what it was more than anything. It was like the linchpin movie to move towards Avengers. Because you got the origins of both him and the Hulk out of the way. Then Iron Man 2, really the most important thing there, the introduction of Black Widow. And then also that Nick Fury is assembling the Avengers project. And that's where you really see things start moving forward to that. And then, of course, we move on to Thor, which was the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that was with Iron Man 2. There was you know, all sorts of cool little things there that kind of, you know, that was the movie that really got people originally talking, like, okay, maybe I'll see what's going to happen. You know, like, you know, people started predicting Avengers and everything after that. With the Thor, I thought Thor really kind of showed off, like, what they can do now with the special effects. It, you know, it kind of took special effects to the next level for these movies. You know, of course, it just came out last year. And I like Thor. It was definitely, I'd say it was the most lighthearted of the Marvel movies so far. It, there were things that, you know, just opinion, I don't, you know, take away, a lot of people liked it. I thought, for me, that Thor sometimes balanced on almost being too goofy, especially like towards the beginning of the movie and stuff. Like, I thought it was funny, but there were lots of times, like, Thor is really the movie where, I mean, you know, obviously, that none of these guys are going to get, you know, in any serious trouble because, you know, they're building up for Avengers and they're superheroes, and it's just, in the Marvel Universe, this is not going to happen. But Thor was probably the least, like, it was the least dynamic in that there was ever any sort of real drama, I didn't think, in the Thor movie. Whereas all the other movies, you at least could, you know, be taken away for a second. Your mind could be thinking, you know, taken away and be like, oh, you know, like, you know, getting a little bit of something. You know, even when Thor didn't have his hammer and everything, I never thought that there was, like, a whole lot of drama in the movie. Like, it was more just about, you know, the whole movie was based around the fact that he didn't have his powers, and it was funny, and his interaction with people in the, you know, on Earth and everything, but I didn't think the dramatic stuff was there. I gave Thor, I still liked it, gave it 72% well done. I thought the tie-ins were great. I thought that the, you know, there were definitely good things about it, like Chris Hemsworth is, you know, an awesome Thor, but I didn't think that there was, like, enough drama there, personally, compared to the rest of the movies.
Right, and I could see that, because, like, Loki's a villain you kind of got to get acquainted with to realize what a threat he is. And, like, I've been a fan of Thor in the comics for a while, but he's very polarizing. I have a lot of other friends who are, you know, huge comic fans that just don't care for Thor. It's a little too out there for them. I'm invested in the mythology, so I thought they did an exceptional job with the film. They really just nailed everything down to a T as far as Asgard, the Warriors Three, you know, his whole backstory with Odin and Loki's backstory with the Frost Giants. I thought it was a very visually stunning movie, maybe the most of the Marvel films, just because they really did a great job of the graphics for Asgard and the transition to Earth. And it actually was one of the only ones I saw in 3D because I wanted to see how they did that. And the 3D, the way they did it was while they were on Earth, it was almost unnoticeable that it was in 3D. And then every time they went to Asgard, it would just pop out. And I thought that was probably the best use of 3D I've ever seen in a movie because it wasn't all about stupid objects just being thrown at the screen, and 3D normally gives me a headache, but it did it so subtly and so well that it was really an amazing visual experience. But yeah, you know, as somebody who's not really into the whole line of Thor mythology and like a lot of other comic fans, like I say, Thor's pretty polarizing. He's about 50-50, you know, on the fence of guys that don't give a shit and guys that are really interested. So, you know, I could see where you thought that about the movie. I personally like the humor I love with Thor because it is just, it's absurd that this guy is a god and, you know, he's talking all flowery. And, you know, they're like, who the hell are you? You know, he's like, oh, I'm from Asgard, and we slayed the Frost Giants. Like, what the fuck? You know, and of course, they're just going to think he's a crazy guy. But, but yeah, nonetheless, it's still, like you said, good review, regardless of your opinions of, you know, where the movie went. Still 72% ain't bad.
Yeah, and then next would be a Captain America. It was probably... Yeah, it's my second favorite of the movies of the build-up for the Iron Man movie, or the build-up for the Avengers. I gave it an 80% well done. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good. I thought it was actually borderline on, like, a great movie, like I thought Iron Man was. I thought it was really good. I thought that there could have been a little bit more. It was a movie where it was great. The action was awesome. I love that, you know, Captain America, you know, when he's first around, you know, you get to see young Tony Stark's dad, correct, in the back in the olden days, which was awesome. You know, love that you got to see kind of like the history of, you know, obviously it's kind of playing off U.S. history, but the history of the Marvel Universe when, you know, he's when Steve Rogers is around the first time, and then when he comes back, you know, I thought it was awesome. I thought that the movie was really good. The action was awesome. The story was good. The Red Skull with Hugo Weaving was pretty badass as a villain. He might have been my favorite of the villains in any of these Marvel movies. I thought it was good, and it had like a couple touching moments where, you know, when Bucky goes down, that's, you know, a serious moment, and, you know, in a, you know, kind of lighthearted movie, so it's pretty cool. I thought it was borderline on being great. I thought all they kind of missed out on was that maybe if the movie, you know, would have had just a little bit more time, they could have really played out kind of Bucky dying like a little bit more. And
yeah,
also,
that was my only beef with the movie. And besides that, anyway, it was my favorite of all the Marvel movies was Cap. I thought really Bucky dying, it could have benefited from like 5-10 more minutes, you know, for that to really play out well, because he deserved better. You'd grown so attached to him, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also thought that, you know, his having his love interest with the other chick, the Haley Atwell character, I thought that it also, you know, it kind of just abruptly went, you know, it's like, it seemed like they had to have, you know, kind of a love story, but they never, you know, really like got together in it and stuff. They had to have some chick pining over Steve Rogers in the movie, and I thought that it could have been a little bit more serious with her too, and, you know, with that, you know, I thought that that was like two chances, both with Bucky dying and, you know, with him going down and, you know, obviously not dying, but, you know, they thought that Steve Rogers, you know, wasn't coming back. You know, there were two chances in the movie that, you know, really could have, you know, been serious moments that would have taken the movie to the next level that they kind of missed the boat on. It could have been pretty easy with about 10, probably like 10 more minutes of movie. But still, even with that said, I thought it was great. It was entertaining the whole time. Like I said, the action was great. The story was, you know, just enough. His transformation from, you know, the young wimpy guy into being Captain America was really awesome. And like I said, all the tie-ins, you know, this is my favorite for the tie-ins for the mythology for all the other movies, because especially with getting to see them, you know, just like I said, getting to see the Marvel Universe in the 40s was pretty great. So, like I said, gave it the 80%. Was really, really happy with it. Thought it was good. Thought it was a great send off, especially afterwards. You know, when he wakes up and, you know, he's in modern. You know, he's obviously in the modern day, and Tony Stark's got him. You know, it was a perfect send off to get you pumped up for the Avengers.
Yeah, and I'm also like a huge Captain America dork. Cap's one of my all time favorite characters. Just think, starting with the Ed Brubaker run, just on the comics, and they based the majority of that movie off of that version of his history. And man, did it pay off! I thought I was really worried about Chris Evans. You know, when going into the movie, I was like, man, this guy is Johnny Storm. He's been in 50 things. How's he gonna pull off Steve Rogers, the heart and soul of the Marvel Universe? But he did, you know, and I'm glad he proved me wrong, because I thought he had a great performance in that film, really both, as you said, as the 90-pound winkling, and then once he became became Captain America after getting the super soldier serum, and it did have lots of great Marvel Easter eggs, of course, the tie into the Asgardian myths, which is based off reality, because lots of the Nazis really were big into the Norse mythology and things, so it takes like that real history and just kind of amplifies it a little bit, and that was cool. I can't say enough things about Captain America. It was my absolute favorite of those movies, and as you said, got me super pumped for Avengers.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah, Chris Evans was really awesome, and it really kind of took it to the next level. He's, you know, just outside of just already being in Fantastic Four, you know, he's kind of the superhero guy for hire in a lot of movies, and even if they're not based off comic books, that's what he's been doing. So I was a little worried. They're like, oh, you know, I've seen him a billion times, but he was great. The special effects were awesome. You know, when he obviously didn't drop down to 90 pounds. They obviously, you know, special effect his face and try to make it a little more puny onto, you know, a smaller body. And, you know, it looked great. You know, he just looked like a skinny guy in the you know, during that part of the movie. So, you know, you didn't jump out and go, what is his head doing on this kid? You know, it looked legit. So, you know, special effects, once again, even for their story, even though, you know, it's, you know, Captain America isn't really, you know, himself isn't all special effects. Like, that's another movie that, the way they wrote it, you know, couldn't have been done even probably like 4 or 5 years ago. But luckily now that special effects have come so far, they were able to do it and, you know, make it seem realistic enough. I want them to be realistic and not obviously the things that are going to happen in these Marvel movies. A lot of the things that happen can't happen in the real world. But, you know, you don't want things to happen that are going to, you know, you want to suspend your belief. You don't want in the movie something to be so crazy that it takes you like, oh. But now the special effects have come so far, like all the things that happen in these movies, they, you know, look real, and within the movie that you're watching, within the world that they've built, you know, they seem legit. So I think, you know, they took the perfect time. I think, like I said, even like 10 years ago, this whole thing probably wouldn't have worked because the special effects probably wouldn't have allowed it to work.
Yeah, really pumped for Avengers. I cannot wait. As you say, this is an unprecedented move in cinematic history to do a shared universe to this degree with different characters combining them, combining different franchises into one. They talked about doing a Justice League movie for years. They tried. They did a very apparently terrible, though I've never seen it, but it's out there on the internet, 1997 pilot movie for a TV series about the Justice League, and, you know, it just never came to pass with the DC's major characters of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So Marvel has done it. They have succeeded, and that's a big blow for them, and, you know, if you call it a war or what have you, it's certainly competition against DC Comics that they were the first to be able to make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, for movie-wise, you know, Marvel's really killing DC. You know, it's really Batman versus Marvel at this point with everything that's been going on. You know, we'll get the new Superman movie coming out next year and another great summer of superhero movies. But the, yeah, a Justice League movie would be pretty cool, but they got to make some good movies that don't have Bruce Wayne in them first before anybody's going to be pumped about that. But, yeah, it's really great. I couldn't be more excited, especially with the great reviews it's getting so far. It's getting very good reviews from the critics, and fans are just going nuts over it. And then nerds that I would expect, you know, if anybody was going to hate it, then it would, you know, it would certainly be the fanboys. And every fanboy site that I see that's reviewed this, and every person, you know, listening to podcasts and stuff, apparently anyone with any sort of pseudo-celebrity or any sort of clout in the nerd world has already seen this movie. You know, starting like a month ago, they've been pre-screening the shit out of it. But, like, everything that I've seen, everybody's come back and said that it was just, you know, great. Even people that I expected to have something bad to say about it have all loved it. So, yeah, I couldn't be more excited. It's going to be great. By this time next week, minds will have been blown.
Yeah, and then we might as well just say next week on the broadcast, we're reviewing the Avengers. We're going to keep this going. So
yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, all right, Mooji, I got to get on the road, so I will see you. I'm going to go play our interview with Jason Aaron while I go freshen up. My man, it's been a pleasure, and I will see you for, on Wednesday for Comic Book Day, then at the Avengers on Thursday or Friday, probably.
All right, cool, man.
All right, Mooji, goodbye. And ladies and gentlemen, that was the Mooji Movie Minute. We got some more tunes for you here. Going to play a little Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned, continuing our comic book theme with Ghost Rider. Gideon, a friend of the show, has appeared on here before and has checked in recently, and I think we'll probably hope to have him on again sometime. I'm going to try to arrange that because he was an outstanding guest, and that was in the early days. He hasn't even joined us on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. But check this out. And when this is over, we'll be back with the exclusive Jason Aaron interview to talk about Marvel Comics. area code. You are on the Midnight Black Mass.
How's it going, man? This is Jason Aaron.
Oh, Jason, welcome, my friend. So sorry. Had a little difficulty getting you on there, but you are live now on the broadcast, and it's a pleasure to have you aboard.
Thanks for having me on. Sorry I was a little late.
Oh, no problem. Hey, you know, never know how things are going to go when you're live, man. But first of all, Jason, we know you're a busy man as a freelance writer. We know your time is precious. We greatly appreciate you sharing some of it with us. Of all here, the ghouls in the late night on the Midnight Black Mass to give us a look behind the beard. So let's get right to the meat of things. Big things happening for you right now in the comic book world, man. You are currently writing Wolverine, the X-Men, the Incredible Hulk. You're taking part in a huge crossover event coming up with X-Men versus the Avengers. I know just reading your columns and things that you grew up a comic book fan. How does it feel to be sitting in that spot right now?
Well, of course, it's awesome. I've been a comic book fan since I was a little kid. I actually started out probably as more of a DC fan than a Marvel guy. But Marvel was, you know, the company that gave me my first big break as a writer, about 11 years ago now. It's awesome. I get to stay home and make up stories for a living and actually get paid to do it. It still kind of boggles my mind sometimes. You know, whenever those checks show up with Spider-Man on it, I'm still a little surprised. it's been a good couple of years for me. I'm very happy, with what I'm doing at Marvel. And I think, this year in particular is going to be a crazy one for me. I've got a bunch of the stuff I've been doing for a few years now wrapping up. And a bunch of new stuff, you know, kind of getting underway. Avengers, X-Men, obviously the biggest one of those.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're going to talk about that more in detail here in just a moment. Let's just take a look at a couple of the things you're working on right now. What about the Hulk? You know, that's a character, just my opinion, that I thought has been a bit overexposed in recent years. I thought there were some really good stories in the midst of all that. But it's just kind of been all over the place, so I was extremely excited to hear that you were taking the reins on this title. What can we expect in the coming months from the Green Goliath filtered through your twisted consciousness?
if you've read the stuff so far, I think we're on issue 4 or 5 is the most recent one. I forget. But it's all been kind of a building towards the full-on Hulk versus Banner throwdown. You know, the issue number one opened with the two characters split apart, and we still don't really know how that happened or who was responsible. It's kind of, you know, being filled in slowly as we go along. And the arc that's going on now is, you know, those two characters for the first time really going at it and, you know, physically in the real world. I mean, we've always seen Hulk and Banner fighting inside their minds for control of the same body. Now we see them literally trying to kill one another in the real world. And that battle will have a very clear winner and loser, and ends explosively, quite literally. It doesn't smooth things over and set things back up again, and everything's hunky dory. The way this arc ends is just another strange twist of the screw in the lives of these guys. So things aren't going to get all rosy for the Hulk anytime soon.
Yeah, and that sounds like an absolutely amazing journey. And you know, as you'd mentioned, we always know the internal struggle between the Hulk and Banner, but now you're giving us the external struggle, and I'm really excited to see where that goes. I'm the biggest X nerd on the planet. The Rev grew up a small wee child in the 80s. Addicted to the Chris Claremont stories, then through the big boom of the 90s with the cartoon and things. And I've got to say, just personally, what you're doing here with the Wolverine and the X-Men and even back to the Schism event, it's some of the most exciting stuff that I think the X-Universe has been faced with in a while. Can you take us through the journey of having to do that, of having to break up the X-Men?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you're digging it. It's great to hear that people who are like longtime X fans like what's going on. You know, it seems like we've also brought some people who haven't been checking out X Men lately into the fold. I think there's a lot of good textbooks right now. I mean, I'm having a lot of fun with what I'm doing, but Kieran Gillen's Uncanny X Men I think is great, and Rick Remender's Uncanny X Force, you know, in particular, I think are two really, really good X books, and I think between all the X-books, you've got very different kind of books. So you don't have to read one to understand the other. They're, you know, I think things connect together, but it's not completely interlocked to where, you know, you have to read everything. You can pick and choose, and I think get very different flavors of X-books. But, yeah, Schism was something that had been building, you know, in the X-universe for quite a while, even before I was really involved. But once I got involved, I really gravitated towards that story. I think it, for me, it made a lot of sense as an evolution for Wolverine with all the stuff that I've been doing. You know, I've been writing Wolverine really as long as I've been in comics now. The first story I ever did was a Marvel Talent Search contest, which was a little Wolverine story. And since I came back to Marvel and have been working there full time, I've been doing Wolverine stuff that whole time. So I think all the stuff I've done with him, I think it all makes sense that this is kind of what the point he evolves to. Some longtime X fans, I think, were a little wary about the whole idea of Wolverine, you know, splitting from Cyclops and opening a school. They wondered, you know, is this me trying to neuter Wolverine or you know, take away the edge that people have always loved about him, but hopefully people see that's still there. You know, he's a character who's always really gravitated towards that younger generation of X-Men, being protective of some of those characters, you know, with Kitty Pryde and Jubilee, and, you know, now we see that with Ivy, and to me that all flows together with him being headmaster of a school. Not to mention the fact that I just think it's a lot of fun to suddenly put Wolverine, you know, in that Professor X role and watch him really struggle with that. I mean, it's not something he's used to and not something that's easy for him, you know, which makes for good character drama and hopefully the kind of X story we haven't seen before.
I do think that it would be just, like, especially because I have been following the Wolverine story since you've been on board with him, and it is like it's the natural evolution of the character, and you've got a great voice for Wolverine, and I think it's part of that southern thing that you mentioned, being originally from Alabama. There's something about that really clicks with Wolverine.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, for some weird reason, even though he's, you know, the character's Canadian. He certainly, over the years, has developed that kind of, I don't know, some kind of down-home grittiness, and, you know, there's a lot of a spaghetti Western hero in him, like the Clint Eastwood Man with No Name kind of stuff. So he's, you know, not to mention all the Japanese and Asian connection. So the character is like a real oddball mix of stuff. But yeah, it's one I certainly enjoy writing, and hopefully, you know, I've been able to develop a voice for him that people like.
And here's something that I want to ask about, because it coming from the wrestling side of things in my career, I've worked in the capacity of what we call a booker, which is the closest thing that we would do to what you do, which is crafting things that would play out in stories that eventually would have a culmination. And you do get attached to the things that you create. And I know as a writer, you have to get attached, especially somebody like Wolverine or just the X-Men in general. After writing them for so long, you've got to feel like they're close to you or a part of you. I mean, even reading them for so many years, but then writing them later, did it just tear your guts out as much as it did mine? The final fight between Scott and Wolverine and Schism, just as a longtime fan, it was killing me. So I know having to be the voice of those characters, it had to take a toll on you, right?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of fun for me. yeah, I mean, that's the good stuff, you know, or maybe that speaks to me being emotionally flawed in some way, but that's the stuff I get excited about, you know, or working on Scout that I do, the creator-owned book, you know, the stuff that at times is the most disturbing or emotionally troubling, you know, that's the good stuff. Like, you like diving into that as a writer, and, you know, later you can look at it and say, oh, that was kind of awful and depressing, but, you know, I get emotionally charged writing scenes that are emotionally charged, whether they're disturbing or funny or, you know, action-packed or whatever, just if it's got a charge in it, like, you know, that's good stuff. That's why you do this job. So, yeah, the Schism just in general was a lot of fun to write.
It's just raw and it's real, and that's the true passion of what any artist does coming out in their work. And as you said, it's the high point when you can achieve it no matter what. But moving on, you know, two titles that we know are near and dear to you here we've discussed on the show a few times, in particular Punisher Max, which we know is wrapping up, as well as your creator-owned title, Scalps. Do you care to give reflections just on those in terms of their importance in your career?
Well, that sounds lofty when I try to put it that way. I mean, certainly two books I've, you know, very close to my heart in terms of all the stuff that I've done. Punisher Max, you know, that book's kind of an oddball, I think, in today's comic book market. You know, it's one big story over the course of, 22 issues, I think, by the same creative team, which was awesome. A lot of those guys kind of had to make sacrifices to be able to stay on that book. You know, it's not exactly burning up the sales chart, but it's one of those books, kind of like Scalp, that people who respond to it, you know, seem to respond to it strongly. I think the last issue of Punisher Max is still, we still have one more to come out. And I don't know, I'm interested to see what people think about it.
I'm anxiously awaiting it.
Well, I mean, hopefully it's a Punisher story you've never read before. I don't want to spoil what happens. I mean, if you've read the previous issue, you kind of know where it's headed and what's going on. But I'd just say this was always the plan from when I first took over the book, from, you know, when we started with Punisher Max number one. This was always where things were headed. And that actually there was a subway ride to Coney Island that I was on with Axel Alonso, you know, who was the editor on the book back then, is now editor-in-chief. And I kind of told him over the course of that subway ride, it's a long-ass ride across Brooklyn. Brooklyn's huge, I found out. So I told him the whole spiel, like from issue one on to the end, this is what I want to do, and, you know, he let me do it, and now we're finally here, and you know, again, it's one of those things that's a little weird. I mean, it feels like I've been writing that book a long time, just like with Wolverine. And it's fun to when you have a big story like that, to get to the end and you know, hopefully stick the landing. And you know, maybe you're a little sad when you look back and say, oh, that was fun, I'll never get to do that again. But, you know, there's always something else to move on to. And then, you know, Scalped is the same way. I mean, Scalped I've been doing for what, 5-6 years now, so it'll be 60 issues by the time it's done, which I'm really proud of, because when issue one came out, you know, nobody knew who the hell I was. I was fresh off the banana boat, just coming out of nowhere. I was just a guy working at a warehouse in Kansas City who somehow stumbled his way into comics and, you know, doing a book about a Native American crime drama. It's not exactly something that people were banging on the doors of comic shops, you know, demanding more of.
But right.
Now right. Like, where are all our Native American crime dramas? But, you know, somehow we were able to get 60 issues out of it, which is, I think, something to be proud of.
And if I'm not mistaken, both of those ended pretty much on your terms. You'd explain the Punisher Max, but also the Scalp. Is that something that you'd planned it to go that long and had ended it, or you just kind of found a stopping point and decided you were going to go there? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, the Punisher Max, that was always intended. This is one story, and this will wrap up. Scott was the same way. I never knew exactly what that issue number would be. You know, I always said when we were around issue 30 that we were about halfway. So that worked out to be exactly. So there were, you know, there were some stories that I always thought I would get to in Scouts that, you know, we could have kept going, but you think at some point, you know, you want to try to end on a high note. You want to go out when people still enjoy the book, and you don't want to overstay your welcome. And certainly once we started getting towards the end, I wanted to kind of build up momentum. I've always loved doing the standalone issues. I did a lot of standalone issues over the course of Scout, but once we started getting closer, I just wanted to do big arcs and, you know, try to wrap everything up on a big note.
It's certainly gotten a buzz about it. I've had a lot of recommendations for that. Scout is not one I've gotten around to yet, but I'm definitely hoping to pick that up in the trade paper format. As far as Punisher Max, it's really disappointing to know that the sales weren't good for that, because I did my part at least. I owned a couple of the trade papers on that one. That Kingpin copy that I have is so worn, I've shopped it around to all my friends saying, you know, you've got to check this out. You've become a big hit in the NWA wrestling locker rooms across the country, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's good enough. That's good enough. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a book that sells well. I mean, it doesn't. You know, it's not selling as good as, you know, the Wolverine or the superhero stuff that I do. Just because, you know, it's mature readers' crime book. You know, Marvel doesn't really do too many Max books right now. So, which again, I think makes it all the more special that the whole team was able to stay together and, you know, actually gave me the leeway to do exactly the kind of story that I wanted to do. And I think it's a Punisher story that, you know, it's pretty evergreen. I think you can pick it up 5-10 years from now and read it, and, you know, it'd hopefully still be an enjoyable story that stands on its own.
But just the rise of the Kingpin in the beginning of it sets up everything so perfectly, where he's, you know, it's a brutal, but it's sad and gritty and exciting all at the same time. It's just a real story of the lengths a guy's going to go and his rise for power, and just from the idea of the Kingpin being a myth and Wilson Fisk coming in and just usurping that role blew me away, and that was a lot of fun, man. So thank you for that excellent work.
Well, thanks. I mean, the idea of using the Kingpin was actually Axel's idea, because, you know, I mean, I had to follow Garth Ennis's run on Punisher, which to me is the run on that will define that character as long as there is a Punisher. That was my favorite run pretty much on any Marvel book of the last several years. So to follow that was really intimidating. And I knew I couldn't come in and try to do the exact same kind of stories Garth had done. So it was Axel's idea of saying, why don't you do a Max version of the Kingpin? So I jumped on that and I said, well, that's great, but if we're going to do that, we have to do a Max version of Bullseye too, which was a lot of fun figuring out, you know, what that character would be in the Max universe, where he can't be the guy who, you know, flicks toothpicks and stuff and kills people, but he's still got to be the assassin who never misses. So making him that kind of like a profiler, where he could get in somebody's head, you know, even Frank Castle's head, and figure out ways to get at him. That was a lot of fun to write.
And the fact that he was batshit crazy, that did translate over to the Max universe, especially the part where he abducts the family and is, you know, I'm Frank. That just blew me away.
Right. Well, you know, it's certainly just a lot of fun to write batshit crazy, especially in Max, where, you know, there are no limitations. I can kind of go as far as I wanted to go. But the idea that, you know, there's something about the Punisher's origin that it doesn't make sense as it's laid out. You know, you start trying to figure out, when exactly did he become the Punisher? Did he become the Punisher that day in Central Park when his family died? You know, if you read some of the good stuff Garth did about Frank's time in Vietnam, you see he was pretty much that guy before his family died. So, you know, it doesn't all fit together, and that's what Bullseye started to bang his head against. So he started trying to recreate those circumstances and find the family and have them killed right in front of him. So I like the idea that he just appeared on the surface to be just absolutely insane, and his methods were ridiculous and over the top. But then as it goes along, you find out, oh, he's actually really good at what he does, and he actually gets into Frank's head like nobody ever has.
Yes, absolutely. And fans, can't say enough positive things about Punisher Max. Go out there and pick up your copies. There's trade paperbacks of every volume except for what's coming out now in the final arc, so you definitely want to pick that up. I know there's probably not a lot you can say at this point, given that we're not into it, but Avengers versus X-Men, we touched on it earlier. That is a motherfucking dream match that has only been teased with it a few times, you know, never on a scale this epic. So just added to my pull list today. What, if anything, can you tell us about this coming up?
Can we use that as a cover blurb? A motherfucking dream match?
Absolutely. I would be honored.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's what you expect. It's what the title says. It's Avengers versus X-Men. It's a big superhero brawl. It's an epic story. It's 12 issues, 3 acts, and each act is a big escalation of the story. You know, there's no real world metaphor like, you know, we've done with some of our events in the past. This is just Marvel's two biggest franchises beating the living shit out of each other. But a story where you've got both sides with really defensible positions. You know, this doesn't come out of the gates with the X-Men as the villains or the Avengers as the villains. I think X-Men fans will be able to root for the X-Men, and Avengers fans will be able to root for the Avengers. You know, and if you're somebody who is not reading either one of those franchises, it's a book you can jump right into. Everything you need is contained within that book. You know, and the simple pitch is, you know, these aren't just Marvel's two biggest comic book franchises. These have obviously become their two biggest movie franchises. And then we've seen, you know, Marvel's movies all building up towards the Avengers that comes out this year. And, you know, X-Men has been a very successful franchise for Fox. So this is the only time you can see those two franchises come head to head. And even, you know, even if we could make this movie right now to make this book into a movie would be about a, you know, you need about a $6 billion special effects budget. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you can get away with in comics. Like, we have an unlimited budget, you know, especially when you're working with such amazing artists. Like, if you can get them to draw it, you know, you can do absolutely anything that comes into your head, which obviously you're a little more limited in Hollywood. So this is like the full-on balls out biggest, you know, Avengers versus X-Men fight you could ever possibly imagine.
That's everything I was hoping to hear. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, it wouldn't be a $60 billion special effects budget, but, you know, the only limitations there are the artist's ability and imagination and your storytelling, and I think any fans that have been following know that there's really not a lot to worry about in that respect. But, you know, just moving along to some various other topics here before we wrap up, I really appreciate you joining us again. The first thing that I read that you were writing was back on the Wolverine Weapon X title. I actually then went back and read the Ghost Rider thing that you did, which that right there was one of the things that made me start following you. First of all, the Ghost Rider, because he's always had trouble finding a voice that I thought fit him, and I thought that, you know, doing the Blaze and Catch in that Heaven's on Fire thing was really cool. But Wolverine Weapon X, I was reading it, and there's a scene where Wolverine is stumbling out of a bar, and he's singing some Hank Williams Sr., and I thought that was cool as shit. Because, you know, Logan Paye, he was probably alive while Hank was around crooning. But then, of course, I also came to find out that you're a fellow Southerner. I'm here from Tennessee. You're just right down the road in Alabama, or now you're in Kansas City, but you're from Alabama. You said you write in a Southern style, and that it helps your voice stand out, and that's awesome because, believe it or not, in pro wrestling, it's kind of a bad thing to be Southern if you can wrap your brain around that. But on the flip side of that, have you experienced any sort of discrimination in the comic book industry due to being from the South, beyond good-natured pig-fucking jokes?
Right. I get a lot of those from Rick Remender, you know, who lives out in California. He loves to make the hillbilly pig-fucking jokes. No, I mean, I've never felt discriminated against or looked down upon. I mean, I think if anything, I think it's helped me. And that, you know, these days, you can break into comics from anywhere in the world. It's not like it used to be where you had to move to New York because that's where all the publishers were. You know, I work with artists who are literally all over the world. You know, in Scouts, the creative team on Scouts, we live in four different countries, you know, between the group of us. So I think as a writer, it helps to be from some place where, you know, not everybody else is from. I think it gives you a voice that stands out a little more. And there aren't a lot of, you know, Southern writers and comics, not very many at all. I mean, Mark Waid is actually the only other guy I know who's from Alabama. But, you know, I mean, he grew up there when he was real little, but I don't know if you'd call Mark Waid a Southern writer. I think
right.
He spent more time in the South than he did. So, you know, in my mind, that has helped, and that it does make you stand out, you know. Not everybody needs to live in New York or California. I love country music. I hated it when I was a kid. I used to be horrified when my dad would watch Hee Haw. I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen, and now I record it on my DVR so I can watch it.
That's really funny because that's the same way. You know, I'm more of a metalhead myself, but in my old age, you know, you go through life's trials and tribulations, and country music somehow identifies with you a little better as
sure.
You've experienced a little more life.
Sure. And I love being from the South. You know, there's a lot about it that I don't like, but I wouldn't change anything in terms of growing up there. You know, I like Kansas City. I like where I live. We have better barbecue than in the South. I have to admit that. But you know, I consider myself proud if somebody would think of me as a Southern writer. I think that's great.
Very cool.
And I grew up on a lot of Southern wrestling too. I remember we'd get wrestling probably out of Atlanta. But I remember, like, Bob Armstrong was one of my favorites. And remember there were like, a couple of different guys who would dress up like Lord Humongous from Road Warrior, which
I thought
was the most awesome thing ever. Even though the dude looked like he was probably about 6'2 or 6'3. It's not like he was a giant, but he'd still kind of push the rope down to step over it when he'd come in the ring. He was massive. But I thought that was the coolest shit I'd ever seen.
That is great. I've been all over that Alabama territory, and in Atlanta, that's, you know, another place where I've done most of the television stuff in my career. And going back, you run into all those old legends out on the circuit doing appearances. I've worked with Bob Armstrong like 15 times. He's the coolest old fella you ever meet. Smokes about two packs of cigarettes before he goes out of the ring and could whip everyone in the building's ass at 80 years
right.
old. Still.
Yeah, still. Yeah, I'm sure he could beat my ass. Yeah, I remember there was one point where he, for some reason, he got banned. He had to leave the wrestling, and then suddenly this dude showed up who was just called the Bullet, who was wearing a mask. So like Bullet Bob Armstrong had disappeared, but now the Bullet's back and nobody knows who he was. Like that was good stuff. I ate that shit up with a spoon.
That's great, and unfortunately a lot of that is lost on the modern corporate version of wrestling with WWE, but that's another rant entirely.
Sure.
That you got to experience some of the true good Southern wrestling.
Right. I find that there are a lot of comic fans among wrestlers, and there seems to be like a lot of wrestling fan, comic fan crossover. I'm sure you could write a paper about, you know, the just the similarities between wrestling stories and superhero stories. There's a lot there, but there certainly does seem to be a lot of cross-pollination.
Oh, yeah. A lot of actually over in TNA Wrestling, which is on Spike TV every Thursday night at 9 o'clock, a couple of their big stars, Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles, we have the same agent and kind of came up around the same folks. They're huge comic book fans. I think Daniels has even done some guest like voiceovers for the little Marvel action figure videos they do. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, man, we're wrapping up here on this interview, but it's been an awesome insight into the world of comic book writing. I greatly appreciate you again joining us. The last thing I'll ask you about here to talk about, we did mention that you grew up as a comic book fan, so you are living your dream, and kudos to you for that. But in the lines of most entertainment work like this, we do it because we love it. From that medium, what inspired you the most in terms of old comics that you grew up on? What were your favorites as a kid that made you want to pursue this even further?
Well, the first book I really fell in love with that made me a comic fan, the first book that I would, I had to get every issue of that was the Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans. Because I was a big DC guy when I was a kid. That's how I got into comics. And I was the perfect age for that book. And that was, you know, great rip-roaring, full-on superheroes action. George Perez was the first comic book artist whose work I could recognize. You know, when you have one of those guys and you can just look at a cover and say, oh, I know who drew that. Like, that's a big thing when you start to be able to recognize different artists. So,
yeah,
that book was big. But then, you know, after that, I discovered Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, and that was huge. And then Grant Morrison's really the guy who I knew, like, I want to do that. I want to do what he's doing. Because he really kind of blew up what people were doing with mainstream superhero books. And I would still say he's my favorite comic book writer of my life. But, I think it's a great time to be a comic book fan right now, I think. You know, as a writer, you look back to the early 90s and you hear the stories about, you know, the guys who would sell 6 million copies of a comic and, you know, buy a house off of one issue of an Image book. So
wow.
You think, man, like I missed the heyday in terms of the money and the business side of things. But I think creatively, you know, there's no comparison. I think these last few years, are far and away where I think we're putting out better comics as an industry. And, in mainstream comics and in independent books. I mean, you know, times are hard for everybody. And, you know, it took a little longer to catch up to comics, but it certainly has. And, you know, we've seen Marvel have to let people go. We've seen people struggle to, you know, to get sales for independent and creator-owned books. So, you know, things aren't necessarily that rosy, but I think creatively, you know, you've got a lot of creators out there really firing on all cylinders, doing good work.
Yeah, and not to plug the competition, but of course I guess it's too much competition since Scalp is with them. But, you know, with the new 52 thing that DC's doing, it seems to have generated a lot of interest. So I hope that translates over for everyone, whether it be Marvel, DC, or Independence, to a bunch of new comic book fans, because I agree with you. I think there's so much stuff to choose from out there right now that it really could appeal to any type of comic book fan. I've got like 6 or 7 titles that I'm going with monthly now, and there's so much more that I want to get that just, you know, the budget limits.
Sure. I think there's good stuff inside the mainstream, and there's good stuff out. I think it's a shame that to the normal person when you mentioned comic books, they think superheroes, that they think that one genre is really representative of the entire medium. Certainly that's you know, if you want to make a living doing comics, you pretty much have to write superhero books. I mean, that's what, you know, dominates the sales chart for the industry. But there are a lot of great books outside of superhero comics as well. So, yeah, I mean, I read stuff all over the map. I read a lot of the New 52 books. I'm friends with some of those guys, like Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire. You know, I think are doing awesome work over there.
Man is crazy.
I mean, you know, it's a small industry. Everybody knows each other. For the most part, everybody gets along. It's a good time to be working in comics.
Awesome. Well, on that note, my friend Jason Aaron, thank you again for joining the Midnight Black Mass. We greatly appreciate you taking us into the world of Marvel and DC Comics. If you're ever at Dragon Con in Atlanta, I know you don't do a lot of the cons, but hit me up. We'll have a few brews. I usually only have to work one night at the con, and the rest of it's just pure debauchery. So we can tear it up. And there you have it, fans, our exclusive interview with Marvel Comics' Jason Aaron discussing Avengers vs. X-Men, Incredible Hulk, and a whole lot more. Great time speaking with Jason. Hope to have him back on the show later this summer to talk about more in the Avengers vs. X-Men world as that unfurls. More tunes right now for you before we get out of here. I got Surfing with the Alien by Joe Satriani, which was the guitarist's tribute to the Silver Surfer, the cosmic Norrin Rad, directly written about a comic book character. So, very cool there. We'll be back with the final comic book news, and then we're out of here. Don't go anywhere.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
We'll be right back.
And we're back to round out another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. Thank you for joining us, Daywalkers. Our Night Owls will catch you when you listen to us on the archive. Gonna round out the show with our comic book industry news. This whole issue or whole edition of the show has been dedicated to the superhero medium, with comic book fever sweeping the nation this summer. And now we're on to the comic book news, the first of which is actors Tom Hiddleston and Clark Gregg, known to fans as Loki and Agent Coulson of the Avengers franchise, are scheduled to ring the bell on the New York Stock Exchange on May the 1st of 2012. So that'll just show you exactly how crazy the country is going over Avengers. The Walking Dead video game Episode 1 is out. You can buy it on the PlayStation or Xbox Network. And it's badass by Telltale Games, a totally different take on the zombie experience. It's very much like The Walking Dead. It's very psychological. The decisions you make will impact you. So very cool. I played through the demo. Be purchasing that when I have more time to sit down this week and really hammer out that episode one. But that game is going to be a lot of fun. News coming from the Marvel camp that a major announcement is slated for San Diego Comic-Con to announce additions to the Marvel Mutant movie franchises. What? We already know about the X-Men First Class sequel that's already gone into production. But now apparently they're looking to franchise New Mutants into a possible feature film. That is not official yet, but the official announcement will be coming from Marvel Studios this summer at San Diego Comic-Con. The Before Watchmen controversy continues over in DC Comics land. Writer Chris Robertson, who was an employee of DC and also wrote on some of the Fables lines for Vertigo, fired from DC Comics after writing a critical blog about Before Watchmen, and the fans are split. You've heard my opinions many times here. The Midnight Black Mass is in favor of the Watchmen prequels and the expanded universe of this story. I don't think it's going to hurt anything. I don't think it's going to take anything away from the original work that you love so much in the Watchmen. But what I do think is that it's a very polarizing topic for comic book fans, and that continues as sides are being taken. And, you know, there's an old saying that any publicity is good publicity, so I anticipate the sales numbers are going to be pretty high, despite all of the outcry against that. And, you know, it even goes further in debate because Alan Moore didn't want it done, so the fans that are siding with him say it's wrong for Dave Gibbons to want to be a part, but they're the same people saying Jack Kirby should have 50% ownership of everything he created with Stan Lee, and you know, like, it seems like the argument's just for whatever serves what you want to bitch about. But anyway, the Watchmen controversy continues. And finally, we'll round it out by talking about Avengers versus X-Men. Jason Aaron hinted at it a couple of months ago when we interviewed him and there in the replay that you heard. But it's keeping going strong, man. Round 3 comes out this week. Just read round 2 weeks ago. A lot of great tie-ins. The majority of the tie-ins actually have been excellent. There have been a couple that were kind of duds. That recent New Avengers with Iron Fist on the cover is like 24 or 25 was the issue number. It was a tie-in, and it was pretty useless. I mean, it was like a backstory of the Phoenix attacking a Chinese village where the Kunlun were, which are Iron Fist's clan. So, you know, no real action in that for the most part. It was all foreboding. But that was a small hiccup in what has been there's been a ton of tie-ins, and I've gotten every one of them. The Secret Avengers tie-in where Thor leads a team into space to combat the Phoenix was excellent. The Wolverine, the X-Men tie-in where Beast and Wolverine decide how to deal with the threat was pretty excellent. And then Avengers vs. X-Men number 2 was just fucking outstanding. Just epic battles, epic dialogue, written by our boy Jason Aaron. Man alive, that really felt like something special. I don't have to give too many spoilers. There's a line in there along the lines of when Namor punched Luke Cage,
they could feel the punch in Oakland. And I just thought it was like the way the massive scale in which they promoted the event in that book was great. The fights were great. APX versus number one just came out this past week. It was expounding on those fights. Got 5 stars from comicbookresources.com. Man, they're not going to sound the part. The first versus issue had Iron Man versus Magneto set up on a poster like they were wrestling matches. And Luke Cage versus Namor. And it was all the, or maybe it was the Thing versus Namor. And it was all of the interiors of the fights, man. It was it was great. Great, epic, like major Hollywood blockbuster action movie version of a comic book. And then Batman Night of the Owls is ongoing, so DC's kicking ass too. I mean, you know, they're not to be outdone here. Because Night of the Owls is some of the best stuff I've ever read as far as Batman stories. Scott Snyder really has me excited about The Dark Knight for the first time in a long time in the comic book form. Not that Batman's always consistent. You can always count on Batman to deliver solid stories, good villains. But you know when those stories come along that you'll remember for the rest of your fandom. And this Night of the Owls, mark my words, is going to be one of those. And that's all we have for you this week, fans. Thank you for joining us here on the Midnight Black Mass. Come see me tonight in Cornelia, Georgia, 8 o'clock p.m. Bell Prime, NWA Anarchy International Television taping. Be there with the Angel of Death, Azrael, taking on Shawn Timbers in his big rematch for the NWA Anarchy Heavyweight title. The Hate Junkies will be taking on the NWA Elite for the NWA Anarchy Tag Team titles. Get your war paint on, congregation. I'm hitting the road. I will see you at ringside. Keep 1 foot in the gutter and 1 fist in the gold. I'm out.
By GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.